Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives are forever changed by a medical diagnosis. Jean Marie will not be joining us today.
That makes me Ron.
Yeah, I recognize you. And I'm Lita. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking with Carly Newton. Carly is a registered nurse at Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies with over 15 years helping healthcare professionals treating sickle cell disease patients with red blood cell exchange all over the globe.
Very nice.
Specializing in apheresis treatments, Carly uses that experience to educate healthcare professionals on the most effective ways to prescribe red blood cell exchange. By focusing on differentiating the different types of transfusion therapies available to sickle cell patients, Carly has been able to put the registered nurse degree that she earned at the University of South Australia to very good use. Carly may spend what pronouns you used, at the Terumo Lakewood campus, but it's the patients and helping them live their best lives that gets her up in the morning or them up in the morning. Let me stop right here. Carly, do you use pronouns?
No, I'm a cis female. Okay. You can call me, but I don't mind if you call me them, their, she, right. Her. That's fine.
All right. Lita. I want to be polite.
No, that's great. No, but no, you're absolutely fine.
Okay. When she's not at Terumo, Carly loves spending time in the great outdoors, and we just found out that she's in the Denver area, so she enjoys everything that the Colorado Rockies have to offer. Good morning, Carly, and thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Hi, Ron. Hi, Lita. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming on. It's great to have you. And after hearing Lita read your bio, I'm like, wow. So I guess I'll start off by saying, what in the first place got you interested in going into medicine?
Do you know what? It was actually my mother. So I finished year 12. I've always been great with people. I've always liked talking to people, meeting new people. And I finished year 12. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And my mum said, I think you'd make a really good nurse. And thankfully, I applied for a late round entry into nursing and got in and have just loved it. So it just goes to show that mums know best a lot of the time, right?
Excellent. And yep. Carly, with sickle cell, when do the symptoms typically appear? And are those typical symptoms making it easy to diagnose? We haven't talked to anybody that has dealt with or has sickle cell in a number of years. So it's kind of a refresher for everybody.
Okay. So does everybody know what sickle cell disease is?
We want to just give them a little refresher.
Yeah, sure thing. So sickle cell disease is an inherited blood disorder, and it's when the hemoglobin inside sickle cell patients contain an abnormal form of hemoglobin, and that's called hemoglobin S. And what happens with this hemoglobin S is the fact that it causes the red blood cells to change shape and create this kind of sickle shape, which is why it's called sickle cell disease. And the challenge or the problems with these sickled cells is that usually your red blood cells, they're round, they're bouncy, and they're flexible, right? They're able to get through small capillaries, small veins. What happens when these red cells sickle is they become really hard and rigid, and they start causing blockages, causing pain crisis, depending where the blockage is. It could cause stroke or acute chest injuries, but it can also end up causing, if untreated, organ failure and even death. So that's a high-level overview around what sickle cell disease is. But thankfully, in the US, every baby that's born with an African-American heritage is tested. So families know very early on if their child has inherited the disease. As for when do sickle cell symptoms begin to appear? Well, babies are born with an abundance of what we call hemoglobin F, and this, and every baby in the world is born with this hemoglobin F. What it is hemoglobin F has a higher affinity of oxygen. And so quite often, for at least the first 6 months of a sickle cell patient's life, the patients are pretty asymptomatic because this hemoglobin F will kind of mask and keep the oxygen levels up. And so it's generally after about the age of 6 months, people may start seeing symptoms. But again, every patient's different, and they'll start to experience at different times.
Okay. Would the symptoms be the same for an infant as they would for an adult as far as the pain from the cells getting stuck?
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right.
And can you imagine being a mom? And your baby's crying and you don't know why? Is it pain? That's got to be the most frustrating thing.
Absolutely. And so that's the hardest thing, isn't it, right? Like when these infants are becoming symptomatic and they can't talk about their symptoms and they're just crying and they're restless. And like you said, as a mother, I meant my sister had a baby with colic and it was just horrific, right? Like, you know, when they're screaming because they're in pain and you just don't know why and you can't ask them those simple questions.
Right.
So
right.
I can only imagine what it would be like for a parent trying to, you know, navigate through that.
Difficult.
So sickle cell, it's caused by genetics. So you must have patients that have family members that also have it? You find yourself treating not just one person or one patient, but an entire family?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Ron. Sickle cell disease is a homozygous disease, which means that both parents who carry the trait can result in their children being born with sickle cell disease. But, you know, when you look at the chance of a child being born with sickle cell disease, if both parents carry that sickle cell gene, there's a 1 in 4 chance that the child will not inherit any sickle cell genes. There's about a 1 in 2 chance they will inherit just a copy of the sickle cell gene from one parent and be a carrier. And there's a 1 in 4 chance that child will inherit both, copies of the sickle cell gene from the parents and be born with sickle cell disease. So it's very common, you know, within families to have multiple members diagnosed with sickle cell disease, but it's also common, you know, only to have maybe one, you know, sibling or parent or none at all. So
okay.
I hope that gives you a little bit of insight into that.
Yeah, my days of high school biology and Mendel and Pease, the genetics, it's kind of like back in the cobwebs here somewhere, but I understand the theory. So how common is sickle cell disease?
Well, sickle cell disease, there's about 70 to 100,000 patients living with sickle cell disease in the US.
Okay.
And it's the most common form of an inherited blood disorder in the world. So even though it's fairly rare, it's still the most common form of inherited blood disorder.
Okay. And how do you treat or mitigate the symptoms in your patients by this red blood cell exchange? Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of your business.
Yeah. So red blood cell exchange is exactly that. We're exchanging the patient's blood. So what we're doing is we're connecting a patient to our device and we've got a line that runs into that device. And as we're pumping the patient's blood into the device, it separates their red cells out from the rest of their blood particles via centrifugation. Then what happens is we remove or we pump those defective red cells up into a waste bag. And at the same time, we actually are infusing healthy donor cells back to that patient.
Okay.
So it's exactly like that exchanging. As we're removing those defective blood cells that become sticky and get stuck, that don't carry a lot of oxygen, we're replacing them with healthy donor cells that have got a higher affinity to oxygen and actually won't cause those blockages we talked about. So the goal of our therapy to keep patients healthy is by exchanging these cells, we increase the oxygenation without increasing the iron content, because we're exchanging one for one. We're not increasing the iron content, so it's a lot more beneficial for the patients. They don't have to go on chelation therapy to like remove that iron. And because we're exchanging almost like a one for one, it means that the blood doesn't increase in viscosity, which means, you know, that they're at lower risk for stroke and vaso-occlusive crisis and things like that.
Okay. How often do you have to do that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, so with red blood cell exchange, there's different types of transfusion therapy that's used to treat sickle cell disease. And so with our therapy, because you can actually target, you actually enter into the device what level of hemoglobin S you want the patient exchanged down to, or and what hematocrit you want the patient left at the end of the procedure, we can extend those treatment times out. So it's generally every 4 to 6 weeks these patients come in. But if they were on like a simple transfusion regime where they're just coming in having red blood cells infused and not being exchanged, that's a little more frequent. That's every 2 to 4 weeks. So we tend to expand that out just because we can be a lot more particular with the goals of the patients that we're treating.
And about how long does that process take each time?
Yes. Yeah. So with red blood cell exchange, it's about 1.5 to 2 hours okay. per red blood cell exchange procedure. Compared to, just for a bit of comparison, when you're looking at like the simple like transfusion mm-hmm. or just topping up their red cells, that's about 3 to 4 hours. So it's quite a quick procedure for, you know, these patients coming in every 4 to 6 weeks.
I would have thought just the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, because we're exchanging those red cells, we can
do it faster because you're really not
exactly
affecting the body hemostasis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Whereas like when you've got simple transfusion, you have to run that blood in over 2 to 3 hours, and that's just protocol. So that's the big difference, is the way we're able to rapidly infuse those red cells back because we're exchanging.
Okay. And yeah. how many locations, I guess, is this done at a hospital only, or is this done in an outpatient location like kidney dialysis centers type thing, or where is it done?
Yes, that's a really good question, Lita, because it's one of our passions at the moment to try and get these procedures out into the community more. So at the moment, they're quite accessible in major, like in hospitals, so okay. university hospitals. But we're working, you know, with CMS, with local patient advocate groups, to really start talking about the things we need to do to get these to more community centers. Like you said, can we get them to more of these like infusion centers in the right. community, dialysis centers? So it's accessible at the moment, but a big passion and a big project we're working on at Terumo is like, how do we get more accessibility to these procedures for these patients?
Okay, good. I hope you can make headway, because I'm sure that that's an important part of your treatment plan, is to get more people involved. Do you have any kickback from patients as far as being afraid of it or hesitant for treatment because it's
I'm sure there's a lot of education involved, especially for new people, right?
Right. How new is this? Is this fairly new?
No, this has been around for the last 20 to 30 years.
Oh, okay.
But you're right, it is. And so there's lots of data out there because it's been used for so long. There's lots of data around the safety and efficacy and a lot of the quality of life. We've done lots of retrospective studies on, you know, how it can help patients live a better life. The you're right. It's such an intimidating thing. I mean, our machine is quite a big machine, and you've got like lines going into you, pulling blood out at about 100 mils per minute. And so it can be quite intimidating when these patients first start. But thankfully, we do a lot of education within Terumo. The university hospitals actually have a lot of education for the patient to make sure they're comfortable and have their questions answered. Okay. And then the other nice thing about sickle cell disease, it's this amazing community of advocates. And, you know, people with sickle cell disease actually refer themselves to as sickle cell warriors because, you know, they're just so brave and passionate in the way they go about living their best lives with this disease. And so a lot of the time they can connect up with fellow sickle cell patients within these advocate groups, mm-hmm. and talk to patients that have already been using this therapy for like the last, you know, 20 years to stay healthy. So it's just a lot of education, and it's something that I know healthcare practitioners are very, very aware of and make sure that there's a lot of education that goes into this for the patients to make them feel comfortable.
All right, great. Thank you.
So I'm going to bounce around a little bit and get into an area that, you know, is near and dear to my heart, food. What about nutrition? How does nutrition play into the lives of people with sickle cell? Do certain foods make symptoms better or worse? Are there things they should be avoiding or certain things they absolutely should be eating?
Yeah, so people living with sickle cell disease are very, very aware of their bodies, and they're very aware. A lot of them know when they're going to start going into one of these pain crises or starting to have adverse events. And so these patients are very aware of, you know, how they live their lives and can live their lives to their best. And so the thing with diet, it's the first thing is they've got to make sure they stay hydrated. It's so important they stay well hydrated. You think if they've got these like more sticky, hard cells, you know, moving around their body, the last thing they need is to become dehydrated and increase that hematocrit and have an increased risk. And then, you know, these patients, through a lot of these patient advocate groups and education, they're really educated to eat a balanced diet, you know, limit their meat with high iron intake, and just sort of have that really well-balanced diet that's low in fat, you know, doesn't have a lot of processed foods with that. And that's really the best way they can stay healthy with their diet.
All right, great. Thank you. And do your patients need to modify their daily activities of living to help manage the symptoms?
Yeah, like I said before, I've met so many of these patients and these warriors, and they're amazing. And so they will know their limits. You know, it's really important that they do get some exercise and they remain active. But, you know, it's not encouraged that they go and do strenuous exercise. So they will know what to do to be able to like go for a light hike or go for a walk or do some light weights. They're strongly encouraged to keep, you know, that healthy lifestyle up with exercise. But because they do have lower oxygen levels, they do need to be very aware of what they can and can't do. And they'll do things like when they're planning holidays, a lot of these patients, for instance, won't go to places in high altitude, right? Okay. Because it increases their risk of having, you know, sickle cell adverse events. So they're very active and live great. They live their best lives, but they're also very aware of what they need to do to be able to reduce the chance of having those adverse events or those episodes.
Well, just as a quick follow-up question to that, would it affect them being on an airplane or no, because
it's pressurized?
Because of cabin being pressurized?
So that's a really good question. And so I guess because the cabin's pressurized, you know, not so much.
Okay.
But it's when you start to get into those non-pressurized zones, that's what I would imagine. But, you know, I think it's really interesting when these, like I was at a sickle cell consortium this week and I was talking to some of these sickle cell warriors, and they were saying, when I plan a holiday, I make sure it's somewhere where there's a hospital that's got access to, you know, sickle cell experts and I can be treated. So that's the way they kind of manage that.
Okay, because we're talking to you and you are where? Where are you again?
Oh, I'm in Denver. Yes.
The Mile High City?
Yeah, are there a lot of people in that area?
Yeah, I'm in Denver, Colorado. So, you know, it was really interesting. We had a sickle cell warrior come out about 4 years ago. She's been having red blood cell exchanges for about 15 years. Mm-hmm. And she came out and she was so excited because – it was, she said, before she started doing her red blood cell exchanges, she probably couldn't have come out to Denver because it just would have triggered her sickle cell anemia. But, you know, she came into Denver. She was really well hydrated. She, you know, knows her body. She knows her limits. And so that's how, you know, these patients sort of work through and keep their their daily living.
And I'm
guessing
I'm guessing that scuba diving is out.
Never met a sickie.
Ron is also part of a group here in Downers Grove, Illinois, that takes people with disabilities scuba diving.
Ah.
It's called Dive Heart. Really a great organization.
The thing with our organization, as long as they're medically able to, because there are certain things that will preclude a person medically from diving, but a disability itself won't. But actually, Lita brought up a good point with the sickle cell and pressure at depth. Would that cause any adverse effects? Or is that a little bit too...
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting question.
Well, I'm going to let him look that up. I'm going to have Ron research that so that I can put something on our website for it.
I think if there's any patients out there with sickle cell disease that scuba dive, but, let us know. But I wouldn't preclude it altogether, but I've just never met anybody or had that question asked before.
All right. Well,
yeah.
We ask a hard-hitting question.
He's going to research it. So.
I am.
Yeah. Now that we have a little bit of background information, it's time to talk about our initiative. To better serve our listening audience, we are an affiliate of a major medical supplier here in the United States, and you'll find affiliate links on our website, Podcast DX. They aim to tailor specific medical supplies and equipment based on the diagnoses to make it less stressful than looking through an entire catalog for what you might need. We are open to your suggestions and will adjust our offerings based on what you, our listeners and guests, find helpful. But now let's return to our show. Carly, do alternative therapies such as massage therapy, acupuncture, heat, or ice alleviate any of the pain symptoms with sickle cell? And are there any medical supplies or equipment that would make life easier for those with sickle cell?
Yeah, so I think when you look at alternative therapies, okay, these people know their bodies so well. When you're looking, if they're in pain crisis, you know, I've heard of them using warm compressors for pain, relaxation techniques, so breathing exercises and aromatherapy if they're having those pain crises. But it's really about reducing that stress in these patients' lives and getting enough rest. And so while, you know, they may not eliminate those symptoms altogether, it's really important that you look at that, you know, and a lot of these patients do look at this from a holistic point of view and look at what they can be doing with some of those Eastern medicine techniques as well as their Western medicine techniques.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, and as far as medical equipment, so I think a lot of these patients are managed, you know, within the system. It's a lot of really about measuring their hemoglobin S and, you know, making prescriptions and their care plans based on how they're currently, you know, how they're currently trending or how they're currently responding to their current treatments. So there's not any direct medical equipment I can think of that, you know, these sickle cell patients would need, but it would be more so working with their healthcare professionals to make sure they've got access to the right tests and the right medical equipment.
Okay.
So I have a couple of questions. One, and yeah. I don't know if we asked this a little earlier, what do you, your own personal opinion, what do you think is the most understood aspect of sickle cell disease? And then as a follow-up to that, what about how it affects some of your patients' lives, less apparent things? I mean, they've got to go for treatments and all that, which obviously is going to disrupt their life. But other things that might get disrupted by having sickle cell or having the treatments for that?
Yeah, I think one of which is really unfortunate, one of the least understood things around sickle cell disease are these pain crises. And so, you know, when these pain crises hit, the way these sickle cell warriors talk about that, it's just heart-wrenching. You know, they come in, they say it's the most excruciating pain you could ever imagine. And so, unfortunately, sometimes they'll go into emergency departments or acute health centers and they would talk about they're in these acute pain episodes, and sometimes they get passed off as narcotic seekers, you know, because these patients have lived with pain their whole life. Some of their observations will be a little low. So sometimes, even though they're saying I've got pain of 10 out of 10, their blood pressure might not be as high or their heart rate might not be as high as somebody else that's not used to being in so much pain with 10 out of 10. So I think the way that affects the way when I've spoken to these sickle cell warriors, just the way they feel after feeling like they are just drug seeking, like the pain is not as bad as they know it is. I think that's really tough, right? You know, these people are a minority group of people. You know, they've had history of, you know, the healthcare challenges they've had over the past, and then when they go in to seek help, it's just not being able to get that care or not being believed that they're in much pain. So I think that's probably one of the biggest misunderstandings with sickle cell disease. And there's a lot of physicians and a lot of healthcare professionals and a lot of patient advocate groups out there giving a lot of education to try and move that misconception.
Good.
The pain crises that they are in.
Yeah.
Is that affecting only the peripheral, the smallest of the capillaries, or can that be anywhere?
It can be anywhere. So the pain crises are generally more of the peripheries. But if you think like if you don't manage your sickle cell disease well, then they end up causing blockages like
anywhere.
If you get a blockage in, you know, of your main artery going up to your brain, then you're going to have a stroke. Or if you get a blockage in your chest, you're going to have like an acute chest syndrome. You know, there's patients, a lot of these sickle cell patients don't have spleens because the spleen's very vascular, and because of the continued sickle cell vaso-occlusive events, quite often they'll have their spleen removed as well. So it's in the peripheries, but it can become life-threatening when it starts to affect some of these major organs of the body.
Okay. I wonder if I have peripheral neuropathy right now for no good reason. And I have found that wearing a wide toe box shoe helps keep some of the pain down. Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, like a diabetic shoe almost, right? I'm curious if that would be something that's prescribed for sickle cell patients, because that would help at least open it up a little bit physically, so that there's not so much compression from the outside also when you've already got the compression on the inside. Do you think that's something that's helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've never really spoken to sickle cell patients about their shoes, but again, they know their bodies so well, Lita, and I bet you I would put money on it that there are patients out there that wear those wide toe shoes to make sure they're not reducing blood flow even more.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna add that to the website because I mean I'm just looking for some way to help people and that's the only thing that kind of hit me. What are you looking forward to in the next year, Carly?
Going home and seeing my family. I've got nieces and nephews that weren't even born when I left Australia eight years ago. And during COVID, I couldn't get back so often. But, you know, every 6 to 12 months I go back, they just grow so much. Thankfully, we've got FaceTime and, you know, we've got great relationships. But I'm looking forward to getting back and spending some time with my family.
Sure. What part of Australia are you from?
Oh, I'm from Adelaide. Oh. Do you know where Adelaide is?
I do not.
South Australia. It's kind of central down south. It's beautiful. And when you're in Adelaide, if you go west, you've got beautiful beaches, and north, east, and south is just surrounded by vineyards and little, like, not mountains like in the US, but like hills, the Adelaide Hills, we call them. It's gorgeous.
Nice. Well, yeah. I hope that you have a safe trip out there.
That's definitely one of my destination spots.
Well, yeah, he's a scuba diver.
Go figure. Yeah, because we've got a really good spot out near Adelaide where you can go and scuba dive and see the leafy sea dragons. It's really popular. You'll have to get out there, Ron.
I would love to. Actually, one of my buddies was working out there with his company for about 5 years. He was out there, and he just got transferred to India. But I wanted to get out there to see him, and when I was planning on going, COVID hit, and it kind of killed the opportunity. But one of the bucket list items was actually going to cage dive with the great whites out there.
That's in South Australia. That's in my home state. You're braver than me, Ron.
Yeah, you won't find me doing that.
It's a lot of fun.
Lita and I will be on the beach with a cocktail watching you, Ron.
Yeah.
And I will be on the beach with a cocktail joining you after I'm done. So, getting back to the Warriors, okay?
Yeah.
What support? Because we always ask this with people that we have as guests, like, how do you get through this? The support from your family and friends. So, with the Sickle Cell Warriors, what support do you know of that they've received once they are diagnosed with the disease? How do their family and friends kind of help them get through it? I mean, the medical aspect is one thing, and you're giving us a ton of wonderful information, but we all need friends and family for support, too. Yeah. What have you seen?
Yeah, and so thankfully in the US, the patient advocate groups are incredible. And so if patients go to the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America, they will be able to register and then meet other sickle cell patients to be part of that community. But there's lots of more regional, local groups that these sickle cell warriors can get involved in. And I think it's not only for the sickle cell warriors, but to your point, it's for their friends and family as well. So there's lots of support, education, camaraderie. And just passion within these groups. So I would say, you know, one thing they can do is go to the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America and you know, be connected with these people and, you know, be able to find out where their local support systems are. You know, you can also go to Terumo BCT. I've got a patient education page for sickle cell patients as well that's just talks about the disease itself and helps educate people. But I would say their first step would be to reach out to some of those patient advocate groups.
Okay. I have a follow-up question, but you pretty much answered that. I'm going to take a flyer and say you would provide the same information to somebody who was recently diagnosed with sickle cell?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the people that are diagnosed as, you know, infants or children. So it's more so the education that, you know, their parents or caregivers are receiving. And, you know, by the time these children, you know, are in their teens, you know, at least in the US, thankfully, you know, they've got a good understanding about their disease and know how to, what they need to do to be able to stay healthy and what would trigger them, you know, to have these episodes. I think that's one of the advantages of living in the US. You've got that great mm-hmm. healthcare system. Unfortunately, we know this is a hereditary disease and it affects a lot of people with African American or Middle Eastern heritage. And so when you get to countries like Africa where they don't have as much access to healthcare, that's where it's really hard because they don't get tested, you know, when they're babies to understand if they've got sickle cell disease. And a lot of people in Africa and those places with less access to healthcare and right. education just don't have the ability to manage it nearly as well.
You just triggered my memory. We actually yeah. talked to an advocate for sickle cell that is also based in Australia.
And oh, wow.
she found that in Australia, they did not regularly test for the genetic trait. And she made a change in Australia because of her work. Actually, she started out as a homemaker,
yeah.
went in and became a registered nurse because of her child having sickle cell, and became an advocate. She is a dynamo in now, if I can't think of her name.
We'll get you that
what
information.
A champion.
We will get what you her
information. Yeah, I'll send you her name. Carly, being a registered nurse, we recognize that the stressors that are on our medical community members. What role has self-care played in your life recently?
Do you know what, Lita? It's amazing that I've always kind of done yoga and I found that's helped. But recently, the last 6 months or so, I've started meditating. Every single morning, I don't get on my phone. I don't switch on the television. But I have got an app that I use and I meditate. And it's only for 10 minutes every morning. And I feel like it's just made me more grounded, more present. I'm just less nice. Stressed during the day. So for me, that's one of the best things I could have done. 10 minutes a day. It's amazing, right? A little bit of self-care and right. how much impact it can have on your life. I've been doing it for 6 months now. I love it.
Good. I'm going to try to get into something like that myself. I need it.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. You think 10 minutes a day, how much can that help? But it's really helped me.
Good
it's
for you.
Been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you.
Well, Carly, we'd like to thank you for taking the time to join us today. How can our listeners learn more about you and the good work that you're doing?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, terumobct.com, and learn more about Red Blood Cell Exchange. You can also go to that patient education website. That's reach.terumo-bct.com/RBCX, and that will be just patient education.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you email me those so that I have
yes.
the... Okay, great.
Yes, absolutely. And then if anybody wants to reach out to me, if they've got questions, you can always reach me on my email, and that's carly.newton@terumobct.com.
Great.
Nice.
Great. Thank
nice,
you.
Nice, nice.
My name is Agnes.
What?
I sent you the name of the woman that...
Oh, what was it?
Agnes.
Okay. Oh, Agnes is the champion down in Australia that was the sickle cell
yes.
champion.
Yes, Agnes.
I meant, yeah, these people, the people that are involved in the world of sickle cell are incredible. Like, they are so passionate. Just, you know, how do we get this done? How do we go and, you know, raise this issue up the flag with politicians? It is really, really inspiring to be around people involved. Sickle cell, and I think even now with the curative cell and gene therapies that are available to sickle cell patients, even the way they're advocating to get better access, you know, I think CMS just passed legislation on Wednesday, which increases the payments that the CMS are willing to make for these patients to have cell and gene therapy by 75%. But if you ever want to be inspired, go and spend some time in the sickle cell community and you will, you know, have a whole new lease on life.
Thank you.
Carly, it has been such a pleasure having you on this morning. And I got to say, absolutely love your accent. It's been nice listening to you explain everything.
Wonderful.
If our listeners have any questions or comments about today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com. Where else, Lita?
Oh, we're also on Twitter. No, X. We're on TikTok.
Instagram. Right?
Instagram. Yahoo. No, not Yahoo. YouTube. Yahoo. Yeah, we're everywhere. And as always, please remember that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or my dog, or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
And I'm going to add this too. If you have a moment to spare, please, 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 please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast.
Thank you.
Till next week.